Does America's need for crude oil have anything to do with the Russian invasion of Ukraine or America's response to it? We're going to talk right now about the whole issue of energy and America's need for oil with Greg Wrightstone, who's the executive director of the CO2 Coalition. He's also the author of a book called Inconvenient Facts. And basically what it does is it deals with a lot of the myths that are propagated by what Rush Limbaugh used to call the environmentalist wackos. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. Greg, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
No, good for you. And I just filled up my vehicle this morning on the way to work at $4.25 a gallon. Oh. And I don't think it's going any lower anytime soon.
Oh, that's so awful. Oh, it's and you know, the people in this country that are at the margins, I mean, they feel it far more than you and I do. And it's hard enough to take, you know, I can't believe these prices.
Yeah. I was just at another interview with a gentleman in Idaho who's got a big old pickup truck. He said it cost, he filled it up, cost him $145. And it's an awfully big tank, mind you, but still, how do people, and I took an Uber ride back from, we were in Boston and returned yesterday. The Uber driver was saying, I can't afford this. I'm not making any money. He's got to pay for his own gasoline. He said, I'm going to stop driving. It has these ripple effects, and it affects the poorest and those on fixed incomes the most.
Oh, yeah. So is there any link, though, between our need for oil and what's going on in Russia?
Well, it is, but it's not just – it's we fit into the big global picture of oil demand. In this country, we use about 20 million barrels a day. Overall, world demands about 100 million barrels. So it's demand is outstripping supply at this point. And one thing we can see for sure is that our production here in this country has declined over the last year or so, from its peak of what it was, just not that long ago. And it's, part of this is by design, Jerry, in terms of Joe Biden's strategy. He told us what he wanted to do with energy when he was running, and then right after he was elected. His plan was to raise energy prices for everybody. Anything coming from fossil fuels, that was the plan. The plan was to raise those prices in order to make the electricity coming from wind turbines and solar panels and unicorn dung, whatever you're going to have for renewables, to make it look more attractive. And he succeeded wildly. Now, granted, this recent run-up that we've just seen over the last few days or a week is attributable to the supply disruptions coming out of Russia. Mm-hmm. But we still import just a little bit shy of 600,000 barrels of oil per day from Russia. At least we were as of a few days ago. Joe Biden has not put a stop to that. The XL pipeline, for example, would have brought 830,000 barrels into the United States from the tar sands of Canada.
Isn't that something? So here we have a situation where basically to pursue the Green New Deal, Americans are really suffering.
They are, and it's, yes, it's all, it goes back to the Green New Deal. And Germany in particular, they're paying the price here with being reliant on natural gas coming in from Russia. Russia was supplying Europe with about 40% of its energy needs. Donald Trump, it was about 2 years ago, he went to Brussels and sat down and warned the Europeans to no uncertain extent that you're making a huge mistake relying on Russia for your energy. It seems he's prescient right now when we look back at this, because he warned them repeatedly, don't do this, don't do this. You can't trust these people. So what we need to do is free up the entrepreneurs and the oil producers here in America. The Biden administration, since the first day he was in office, systematically went about stepping on the necks of those that are producing oil. He wanted to rein them in, and he frankly wanted to destroy oil and gas and coal companies because supposedly they're leading to catastrophic global warming, and that's just not the case. So he's trying to solve a non-existent problem because there is no climate crisis.
That is just so amazing, and it we're all being hurt by it. You know, in some ways, I mean, I could understand if you say, okay, look, in the long run, we want to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels, and we want to have more renewable energies, and, you know, we'll move toward that. Okay, fine, but we're not there yet. And even now, the wind turbines, they don't necessarily work if it gets really cold, or plus they kill a lot of birds, and isn't that bad for the environment? So
you think?
Yeah. No, but think about it, though, in terms of it's almost like the Afghanistan situation. Okay, we'll take the army out, and then we'll take the civilians out. Oops.
Right, and here... Oh, we'll destroy our energy sector, and then we'll think about what we'll replace it with. Well, come on, man. To borrow a phrase from Joe Biden, come on, man.
That's right.
Just look at what he's done. On the first day, everybody knows about the XL pipeline. That was well publicized. The other thing was banning any additional leasing on federal properties. Mostly that's Gulf of Mexico, offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. The other was... on that same day, he banned development of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, which is thought to be the largest undeveloped oil accumulation in North America. And it continues as recently as last week. He instructed FERC not to issue any new pipeline permits. And on the same day, he banned any development of the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska, not to be confused with the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is in Louisiana. They're basically large caverns full of oil waiting to be just pumped out. But the NPR is, again, a large undeveloped oil region. And why that's important because the Prudhoe Bay field has been in declining production for many years, and the Prudhoe Bay pipeline taking that oil south is nearing its economic limit. And once that happens, it's going to have to be decommissioned. Well, those two other projects in Alaska that Biden has prevented development now, that would have extended the life of that pipeline for many, many decades. Once that pipeline's abandoned, all of that huge oil accumulation is stranded forever, probably never to be produced. So these things have long-reaching consequences that have – and once you've made these bad decisions, it's very difficult to start these things up again. You can't turn an aircraft carrier on a dime, and you can't restart your national energy programs either.
Wow. So, I mean, Trump was really on the right track in terms of trying to get us to be energy independent.
And he did. The very week that Joe Biden was inaugurated was the first week since 1985 that America did not import one barrel of oil from Saudi Arabia. That week. We had just become nearly energy independent, and we should have been very proud. We were very proud of it, and it's gone south ever since. It's disgusting. It's shameful. It's beyond explanation. And I'm stuttering because I don't know what words to use to describe the insanity of stopping production in our own country, but yet on the other hand. They're talking about importing oil from Venezuela and Iran, and we continue importing oil from Russia. So we're funding the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Apparently, they want to fund the development of atomic weapons in Iran, and they want to fund the communist regime in Venezuela. While we don't produce our own, I have no idea why they're doing it, but if you were going to say, I want to destroy America's energy sector, Jerry, what would you have done different?
That's a good point. Know? Yeah, so the premise of the whole thing is that there is supposedly catastrophic man-made global warming, which they've changed the name to climate change, that is a catastrophe. As AOC, the architect of the Green New Deal, said that, we only have 12 years left on the planet. Now, she said that 3 or 4 years ago. So, now we're down to, 8 or 9 years left, supposedly. So why don't you address how this is a myth in the first place? I mean, because you're the scientist.
Yeah, it's amazing what's happening. And by amazing, amazingly good. If we look at the modest warming, we're in a warming trend. So it's been warming for more than 300 years. The first 250 years of this warming had to have been entirely naturally driven. But if you combine that modest warming with increasing carbon dioxide, what we see by almost every metric we look at, Jerry, Earth's ecosystems are thriving and benefiting and prospering. And the human condition and humanity are benefiting from that. We're breaking crop growth records year after year. We see just by everything we look at, just deserts are shrinking, not expanding. Forests we're told about deforestation. No, what's actually happening is reforestation. We have 50% more standing timber in acreage in the United States today than we did in 1953. 50% more. We're told that we're experiencing deforestation, just the opposite. We're seeing that. Is there sea level rise occurring? Yes. Is it the same slow rate that it was 100 and 120 years ago? Sea level has risen about 8 inches since 1900. That's not too alarming to me. That'd be if you're standing at the ocean, it would come a little bit above your ankles. Again, that's not very alarming. And the amount of rise from now until the end of the 20th century is about 7 inches, maybe 8 inches, about the same, 6, 7, 8 inches. Again, nothing catastrophic. So we're seeing all these predicted consequences of agricultural disasters and famine, just as not supported by the data. And we just exposed there's misinformation and scientific malfeasance going on, promoting this narrative of man-made catastrophic warming. Just last month, we exposed the World Meteorological Organization, who stated in their recent report that there were 5 times as many natural disasters today as there was in 1970. We looked at the exact same data. We found that since the year 2000, natural disasters have been in significant decline, just opposite of what they're reporting. The other big thing I like to do, Jerry, is look through human history and compare that to climate history, and we find that there's a strong correlation between the rise and fall of temperatures and the rise and fall of civilizations. And it's just opposite of what the doomsayers and the prophets of doom, and that's prophet by spelled P-R-O-F-I-T, prophets of doom are telling you, because it was the warm periods that were much, much warmer than we are today, that were prosperous and thriving and great empires and civilizations. It was the cold periods that were horrific. Again, just opposite of what you're being told.
That is amazing. Well, we have enough time for... Oh, wait. That's interesting. The Skype... okay, we have enough time for you to give us a closing thought and then also your website at the CO2 Coalition and then also for your book, which is inconvenientfacts.xyz.
Well, I think this belief across a broad swath of the public of catastrophic man-made warming is a mile wide and an inch deep. I just see it time and time again. I think the great population of America are greatly skeptical of this. And, again, we should welcome the warmth, welcome the increased CO2. The CO2 Coalition, top experts in the world, go to co2coalition.org,
okay.
co2coalition.org. Take the climate quiz and learn more.
All right, Greg Wrightstone, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you.